Good morning. I would like everyone to just kind of be present here. I think that's something that sometimes we get so lost in. We're so busy, we're going so many different directions. I think just being present and calm and in this place, which is such a beautiful place, is such a magnificent thing to be able to do. So I'd like you to take some deep breaths in and out. And again, and out. One more time. I want you to, if you're comfortable, close your eyes. Just kind of pay attention to what you're feeling, what's in your head, what's in your heart, what aches you have and pains. For just a moment, take what's in your head and let it slide down your spine to your heart, working at becoming heart-centered and present in your heart. And I want you to just spend some time there in the quiet. And when you're ready, open your eyes, come back, be with us, stay focused, stay heart-centered while we listen to the next song. That was lovely, really. Thank you very much for being here with us and sharing our wonderful girls with us. As Chris said, when we got ready to decide who was going to be speaking, there really was a little arm twisting going on. Cindy was just trying to stay out of it, but Chris and I were going, no. I spoke about a year ago, and it was one of the most petrifying things I've ever done. I've spoken a lot in a variety of places, but coming here and being here, even though I'm among friends, is a little different. You want to say something that has value, something that has worth, and you never know. So I started planning for this, thinking I was going to be talking about how I came to my understanding of myself being a child of God. I'm a reunited adoptee, and it's been an interesting path, kind of seeing how I fit in the world and come along to where I am. Just on a side note, this weekend I got two new brothers. Who knew? Which is like, how does that happen? So that will maybe be next year. I don't know if I'm even asked back. So we'll see. So that was where I was going to start, and I was really compelled to change what I said after the weekend, first weekend in August, when 40 people, innocent people, people were slaughtered in places that they just go to, and they just, I mean, you know, going to Walmart, going out with friends, you know, all those places that we now read about and hear about and can't get ourselves away from. You know, the 40 people who died, the almost 80 people who were injured physically, the many multitudes of people, fans, our friends and family, and just people there who were re-traumatized again, all of that, and us, who, you know, watched it on TV or the computer or see whatever, and I don't know if you're like me, but it's hard for me to turn that off. It's horrible, but I can't turn it off. I remember when Sandy Hook happened, I was decorating for Christmas that weekend. I was still working. And I cried as I'm pulling out my Christmas decorations, you know, and trying to get on with the holiday and thinking what it was like for those people. Lord, forgive them. They know not what they do. The compassionate words of Jesus, while he hung from the cross, having been crucified by his and abandoned by his followers, but still praying for them. Lord, forgive them. They know not what they do. One of those mantras that has become mine. Another one is when my another one I have is when my children were young, we lived in Machias, and we lived in the middle of in a really lovely spot in the middle of 8 wooded acres. It was a beautiful, private, you know, lovely spot until we were burglarized. And people, 4 individuals came into our home and took anything electronic, which it was not the electronic age it is now. You know, I think I had a record player that they stole, as well as anything else that they could find. And I had written down serial numbers on a whim. I mean, I don't know any other time I've done that. And so we got all of our stuff back. The 4 people who broke into our home were arrested. And so there was really quite a bit of, you know, positive experience, which rarely happens, you know, that you get that kind of experience. But what was gone was my peace of mind and my comfort and my trust that we were okay in that place in the woods. And so I was talking to a friend of mine, my friend Teresa, who was still a good friend of mine, and her mother was visiting from Montana. Her name was Esther. And I was telling them, I cannot calm down about this. I can't go to sleep. I don't want to leave my children, because sometimes they were, you know, in the home alone. I just can't deal with this. I'm not doing well. And Esther was a devout Catholic and very much believed in prayer. And she said to me, you need to pray every time you leave them. I said, I don't know, how do I do that? You know, I mean, what do I say? And I believe she gave me the words, Lord, watch between me and thee when we are apart one from the other. And I want you to know that I said that prayer every day I left my children. Every day I left my home, I would picture it in my head and all the people I loved. And it was such a huge anchor in a positive way for keeping me steady and strong and letting go and letting God. It was like, you know, Esther's been long gone for many years, but that gift that she gave me of having something to say was so important and so healing and so helpful. Lord, forgive them. They know not what they do is another. It's hard to imagine any human having the compassion and love for others that Jesus had. I'm not delusional. I don't have that. And certainly, we are all of the human condition. But those words comfort me when something happens I cannot understand. When the shootings happened that weekend, there's no logical way to frame that as okay. There's just nothing. and we keep having them happen again and again. Lord, forgive them. They know not what they do, is what I hold on to during those times. Many of my friends and myself worked at Marysville Pelchuck High School. I was there for 8 years and then left and went to Kamiak and talked with Deb Barton, who's sitting right out there, my good buddy there. And when the unthinkable happened at Marysville Pelchuck and a student chose to take the lives of four other students, and injure severely another one, as well as himself, was the deadliest shooting in school shooting in 2014. Sadly, not the deadliest of all. I left Kamiak, and in the middle of the day, and went to the church where all the people were picking up their children, where the people at the school, once they were released, were being taken to. I went into that church. As I walked up into that church, I'm looking for someone I know, because I'd been away from Marysville for a while. My husband taught there too, so we're pretty well connected there. But I'm looking frantically, as everyone in the crowd was doing, for someone, you know, I know. And I'm standing next to this woman, and I said, "You look really familiar. Are you Marysville teacher?" And she said, "No, I'm Elisa Jaffe." She's an announcer or a reporter for a local news station. But I was frantic, you know, I'm looking for someone I know. I got up and it was, you know, there was tape, things were taped off, and so I just went under the tape and went to my friends who I saw. And I'd really gone for my friends. I assumed at that time that one of them had died. We knew at that time one person had died, and so I thought it was probably one of my friends. I knew all the administrators, all the counselors, you know, many of the teachers, and I was frantic too. I think we all felt that. The parents on the outside of that area were just, I will never forget seeing them. I think the rumor had gone out, not the rumor actually, the information had gone out that there were Native kids involved in that, and so there were tons of parents there, and they were frantically looking for their kids. The kids and the staff looked stunned and in shock and numb. I will never forget the guy that was my partner when we were counseling. We shared a grade level. The color of his skin, which was gray. And just the general trying to make order out of chaos, I think, was just an amazing thing. Lord, forgive them. They know not what they do. Hate is defined as intense hostility and an aversion usually driven from fear, anger, or injury. Biological changes happen, elevated heart rate, blood pressure. Adrenal glands flood the body, pushing blood towards muscles in preparation for physical exertion, fight or flight type thing. Buddha said, "You will not be punished for your anger and hate. You will be punished by your anger and hate." 1 John 4:20 says, "If anyone says, 'I love God,' and hates his brother, he is a liar. For he who does not love his brother, whom he has seen, cannot love God, who he has not seen." When the rest of the Marysville story came out, I learned that I knew some of the other families, but not well. But the shooter's family was the family I knew the best. I knew quite well, actually. I knew a lot of extended family members. One of his aunts is one of my closest friends. All of those families were victims as well. All of them. Innocent victims of violence. What I found out, though, in knowing about that, was the shooter's father was actually one of my former second graders. I'd known him years before. I'd known his family for years. And later on that following year, I saw him actually at a wrestling match where my grandson was wrestling. And he was with a group of Native kids that I'd already, they're all adults, but you know, they were kids of mine. So Native former students. And I think someone mentioned to him who, you know, that I was up there and I'd asked about him. He came up to me and hugged me, and I hugged him. We shared tears. And I said to him, "You'll get through this." And he said, "I have to. I have other kids and family. I have to." And we just kind of looked at each other and had that moment, that sharing of hearts moment. And then he went on his way. And as we were going to leave again, who appears at my side but him again? And we hugged again. And off we went into our life. I will never forget that hug. I will never forget having that conversation with him. The genuine heartbreak that he felt for all that went on. I'm not getting into innocence or guilt or any of those things. He was later incarcerated for gun-related issues having to do with that. That's not where I'm coming from. I'm just coming from the humanity part of things, where you connect with that one person, no matter what their circumstance, and give them love, and they give you love in return. Sadly, these things continue to happen. So how do we cope with it? What do we do to deal with these ongoing traumas, because they aren't ending? And the first thing I tell you that I think I try to remember is to breathe. Just like we started with the meditation, breathe, then breathe some more, and breathe some more. And then do it again. It biologically slows you down. It helps you calm. Turn off the TV or computer. You don't need it. The trauma will still be there. Step away if you can. Reach out. Hold on to what you love. Remember, you are of the divine and carry a spark of divinity within you at all times. You will know how and where and what you need to share with others. Seek connection that soothes you like a child, little child in their blankie. Find what gives you strength. Find what supports you. Reach out to those you love and love you. Spend time together. This is a church of loving people. You almost cannot be here and not be hugged. The energy is always that way, and there's things going on all the time. So if you need to, come here. Spend time with us. Pray. And if you don't know what to pray, pray, "Lord, forgive them. They know not what they do." Your own may be better and more appropriate for you. That one works for me. Every time I cannot understand. I cannot understand what happened. We have wonderful prayer chaplains here that will pray with you. Pam has taken me by the hand more than once and said, "Let's pray." She could see it in me. I didn't ask her. She came to me. And there, you know, there are so many people here that would be that for you, would do that for you. And then do all of them again and reground yourself and retouch base with whatever it is. You know, for me at one point, putting my feet on the bare ground was something I needed to do. Basic things. It doesn't have to be reinventing the world. We will not understand what we cannot understand. So you have to hold on to what you know, what you believe, and what you trust. One definition of forgiveness is a conscious, deliberate decision to release feelings of resentment or vengeance toward another, regardless of whether they deserve it or not. Forgiveness allows us to let go, not to forget or erase, but to let go and start to move on. Proverbs 10:12 says, "Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all offenses." Always hold on to what gives you hope, what gives you love and steady feelings, and what you value, and hold on tightly. On August 9th, 1945, the United States of America dropped an atom bomb on Nagasaki, killing 70,000 people instantly and devastating everything and everyone in its path. It is said that one spire in the cathedral there was spared, and that one individual crawled his way to the spire and rang the bell of that destroyed church. The sound of that bell rang out across the area as a symbol of life, a symbol of hope to all who heard it, and continued to be rung daily for many years to come. Always hold on to your bell of hope. Ring it loudly for all to hear. Love will save us. From 1 Corinthians 13, verses 4 through 7, love is patient. Love is kind. Love does not envy or boast. Love is not proud. Love does not dishonor others. Love is not easily angered. Love keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices in truth. Love always protects. Love always trusts. Love always hopes. And love always perseveres. My love to you all. Thank you.